I was privileged to be in Southeast Asia when our prisoners were freed. And so whenever I preach, I always request the song that we just sang. Thank you, Director of Music, for honoring my request. My chains are gone. I've been set free. Our sermon this morning is about heroes. Heroes. Some of you may have met a real hero. Others of you may be one to people who love you and who care about you. I firmly believe that nobody starts out trying to be a hero. But rather, it's when an ordinary person encounters an extraordinary set of circumstances that courage or bravery may be called for. And either that person responds or they don't. You may have read about the young housewife driving her car, and an accident occurred pretty much in front of her. And she jumped out of her car and ran toward it, hoping she could make some kind of difference. And as she got closer, a strange thing happened. She felt imbued with an extra amount of strength. And she was able to pick up the rear end of that car, and a child was freed, and a life was saved. Or you may have read about the man who was walking through his neighborhood at night, and he heard the strangest sound he's ever heard in his life, like somebody was torturing a little kitty, when in truth, the house was on fire. And with no regard for his own safety, without thinking it over, he ran into that burning building, and he saved a life. Most of us in this area where we live have read stories about military heroes. Young men and women in our military who, without being asked, performed a great heroic act. A few years ago, my youngest son, Kent, got me a Father's Day present, which I treasure. I don't know if you can see it in the back, but it's entitled Medal of Honor. And it's a compilation of narratives written about each person who's ever won that highest decoration. I'll share just one of those stories with you now, and I'll be true to the author's own words. John L. Levito was a loadmaster on a C-130 aircraft. Anybody in here ever gone on a C-130? Yeah. You'll remember this then. On the night of February 24th, he was asked to fill in for the regular loadmaster on an AC-47 called Spooky. Among this aircraft's weaponry were MK-24 flares, which burned it closely, listen to this, 3,000 degrees and provided 2 million candle power of intensity. In other words, it could light up a ball field. After cruising for more than 4 hours, Spooky 71 received orders to go to the Ben Hoa area where North Vietnamese troops had come out of their jungle sanctuaries under the cover of darkness to launch attacks on U.S. troops. Spooky dropped several of its 27-pound flares out of the open cargo door, then raked the enemy with bursts from his miniguns. Suddenly, Spooky 71 was rocked by a violent explosion. The plane had flown directly into the path of an enemy mortar round, and shrapnel had ripped holes in the wings and in the body. The pilot fought valiantly to maintain control. The five crewmen in the hold were all wounded. Airman Levito had been struck by more than 40 shell fragments just as he was arming a flare. The crew member who had been about to throw the flare was on his back, and the flare was bouncing wildly throughout the hold. The plane was gyrating in a 30-degree turn. Levito, despite the numbness overtaking his body, managed to reach one of the gunners who was about to fall out of the open cargo door and drag him back from the bay by his uniform. Then he went after the flare. He knew it would detonate within 20 seconds, burn through the metal floor of the cargo hold, explode the ammunition, and destroy the plane. The plane pitched and lurched, throwing Levito from side to side. Twice the smoking flare rolled just beyond his grasp. Now listen closely. Then he fell on top of the flare and trapped it. Hugging it to his body, he crawled toward the cargo door and heaved it out. It exploded one split second later. The pilot of Spooky 71 had reconstructed what had happened in the hole by the pattern of blood Levitow had left on the floor. John Levitow recovered from his wounds and flew 20 more combat missions in North Vietnam. On May the 24th, 1970, he was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Richard Nixon. He was the first enlisted man in the Air Force to receive this honor. Did this man set out to be a hero? No, he just took the place of somebody he wanted to substitute for on a routine night mission over the cold skies of North Vietnam. John Levitow, it was an honor for me and probably some in this church to wear the same uniform that you wore in service to our country. I salute you. Rest in peace. Kirkwood, if I were to ask you a question this morning, how would you answer it? Here's the question. What makes a hero? What are the qualities, the characteristics, the traits that set someone apart into this rare category of heroism? Have you ever known a real-life hero? I dare say that if you and I got on an airplane 2 weeks ago to Houston or to Mexico or Cuba or the Bahamas or in other places so many people died from bad weather, and if we worked side by side with those other volunteers, water up to our chests, our feet stuck in the mud, cold, hungry, lonely, 20 hours a day, when we returned to our own community, we would think that we had worked side by side with some honest to God heroes, and we would be right. Or if we went to New York City following 9/11, how many chilling stories of heroism could we hear from people who are just like you and me? So many heroes, so much bravery. This morning I would like for us to shake hands, so to speak, with the man who steps out of the pages of the Bible and into our hearts forever. Now, he may not possess the wisdom of David or the stamina of Moses, but is he a hero nonetheless? I'll let you make up your mind on that in just a few minutes. For now, come with me. Come with me into a dark, foul-smelling dungeon located in Judea. Strain your eyes as you peek through a little hole in the prison wall. Everything seems still, but then you notice a little movement in the left side of the prison. I don't know if this happened for sure, but I've been in that prison and there were rats running around. You strain your eyes further, and then you see him, dirty, unkempt, lonely and bony. And yet this man, this very one, has inaugurated history's greatest movement. His words have triggered a revolution that lasted for 2 millennia. Future historians refer to him as brave, courageous, noble, a visionary. John had never known doubt. Hunger, yes. Loneliness, of course, but never doubt. Only raw conviction and rugged truth. John the Baptist, conviction as fierce as the desert sun. And now as he faces death, he doesn't raise a fist in victory. He simply asks a question. His final act is not a proclamation of courage, but a confession of confusion. Find out if Jesus really was the Messiah, or are we to look for another? The forerunner of the Messiah seemed a little frightened here. You and I would probably not call what he did heroic. But we would rather see John die a peaceful death. We'd rather that the baptizer was allowed to catch a glimpse of the mountain. Sailors are allowed to look at the seashore. Why not him? And isn't he the cousin of Jesus? If anybody deserved to be there at the end of the trail, it was John. I'm probably convinced, as I've shared with some of you a few times, that my oldest son walked the Appalachian Trail, all 2,358 miles of it, and all alone. We prayed for him every night. And frequently I thought, wouldn't it be horrible if something prevented him from finishing his walk, 5 months of his life? What if somebody stopped him from going to the final mountain at Katahdin, Maine? Or if someone had prevented him from taking that 5 millionth step, 5 million, that's required to finish that trail? Author Max Lucado puts it this way: John deserved to be there at the end. But it wasn't to be. This hero of the faith was never going to see the miracles he prophesied or the kingdom he announced. Heroes seldom do. A hero may look just like you and me. Ordinary people, policemen, students, babysitters. And it's hard to recognize them sometimes because they're so normal. For every hero that's in the spotlight, there are 10 that get no recognition. Listen closely to this. I like this. Behind every avalanche, there is a snowflake. Behind a rock slide, there is a pebble. An atomic explosion begins with one atom. And a revival can begin with one sermon or one altar call. Let me close the book on this sermon by sharing with you a story of an ordinary man. A man who went to church on Sunday, as he always did. This particular Sunday morning, he woke up and looked out the window, and about a foot of snow had accumulated overnight. And so he tossed back and forth in his mind, do I really need to go today? Who's going to come out in weather like this? But he was a deacon, and he said, it's my duty to go. And so he did. He put on his heaviest clothes and trudged the 6 long miles to the little Methodist church where he attended. And he learned that the preacher was not able to dig out, and that as the only deacon there, he would have to preach the sermon. Scary. This unprepared, unpracticed deacon did what he had to do as he preached his heart out to the 12 regular members who were there and one visitor, a teenage boy. At the end of his unplanned but spirit-filled talk, an uncharacteristic courage warmed his body like a warm winter blanket. He lifted his eyes and he looked straight at that teenage boy, and something told him to say this: young man, look to Jesus. Look. Did the challenge make any difference? Let the boy, now a man, answer. I did look. And then and there, the cloud lifted from my heart and the darkness rolled away. And in that moment, I saw the sun. Did this man's ministry to that teenage boy make any difference? His name was Charles Haddon Spurgeon, the greatest preacher England has ever known. Did Edgian know what he did that day and what part he would have in history? Probably not. Do heroes know when they've been heroic? Rarely, perhaps. But Kirkwood, we do well to keep our eyes open, for tomorrow's Spurgeon may be cutting our lawn or delivering our pizza, and the hero who inspires him may be closer than you think. He might even be in your mirror. Let's bow our heads. Father, thank you for this time together. Thank you for a Christ who lives, a Christ who forgives us no matter what we've done and sets us on the pathway once more. Thank you for freedom. Thank you for courage. Thank you for your Son. Amen.